This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
It's time to break the silence and open up the dialogue around the topics of miscarriage and baby loss.
No more shame, no more taboo. Let's ditch it for the sake of our children.
The ones who are, the ones who will come.
And in memory of the ones who never came to be.
This is the Worst Girl Gang Ever podcast.
Hi everyone and welcome to this episode of The Worst Girl Gang Ever. We are joined today by Katie. Thanks so much for joining us, Katie.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to be able to chat to you guys about this.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you here.
It is. We've covered the topic of neonatal loss so far in this series. So it's definitely something that we need to be talking about more. So I'm glad that you can be here to share your story. Do you want to start from the beginning? Tell us a bit about your pregnancy.
Yeah, absolutely. So my husband and I decided to start trying for our family a couple of years ago. Hadn't really been sure what we wanted to do in terms of having children for a long time. We've been together about 11 years now. Just thought it was the right time. Got pregnant quite easily. Didn't have any troubles with that. Felt very lucky. I was 35 when I got pregnant. So I was like, slightly older, I guess, compared to what people say these days, but felt okay. Had a very straightforward pregnancy. Everything was going well. Never even considered something would go wrong, because you're not obviously told about the things that can go wrong when you get pregnant, rightly so, because you don't want to be worried. Just one day woke up with slight cramps and thought, this must be those twinges everyone talks about. Went for a walk, sort of had some breakfast. A couple of hours later, they were sort of still the same, almost getting a bit stronger. So I rang the local hospital. And he decided to go into spontaneous. I went into spontaneous early labour.
How many weeks pregnant were you at this point?
27 plus 4, so just shy of the 6 months. So just before third trimester.
Wow. And yeah. What was the initial... was there disbelief? Was it panic? What was going through your mind?
I think just shock more than anything. I think it's funny, until you're in a situation where you have to worry about more than one person, you don't know how you're going to react. So my initial worry was for me, because I thought something was going wrong with my body. And then all of a sudden it dawned on me, oh God, like how's, and we didn't know if we were having a boy or a girl at this point. We didn't find out. So It was a weird kind of transition through, like, am I okay? And, oh God, now I've got to worry about, like, the baby. Like, is the baby okay? And same with Rob, it was just pure shock. I think he didn't even register what was going on until Aidan was literally being born. I don't think he'd quite grasped what was happening. And I was just in complete shock at the time.
So what's the process if someone goes into early labour? What do they do?
So I rang the hospital. They were very sweet and very calm. I had a good birthing experience with our local hospital on the day Aidan arrived. They called me in, said, try not to worry. It could just be Braxton Hicks style pain. It could be nothing, but, come in. I'd been to the toilet and there was the smallest amount of blood, but it was just so negligible. I was like, oh, do I worry about this? But they said, come in, we want to check you over. The hospital was only a 10-minute drive from us. By the time I was there, the pain had started to increase. Still hadn't registered it was labour or contractions. They put me in a side room. To me, it felt like I was in there for hours, but it was probably only 20 minutes maximum. And they just came and did a couple of tests, tried to sort of see if I was dilated, sort of found out I was 3 centimetres already. It was a bit too late for them to try and put an emergency stitch in. Otherwise, that's probably what they would have tried to do to hold him in a little bit longer. Just from there, put me in a wheelchair, rushed me through to the labour ward. Rob described it as they pressed the red button, and it was a Sunday afternoon. So as you can imagine, it was skeleton crew. And within 10, 15 minutes, everyone was in the room, And he just came so quickly. I mean, I think the nurse, a midwife, I'm not sure what she was, to be honest, I didn't get a chance to really pay attention, but she was midway through examining me and she didn't even have a chance to swap over her gloves and he suddenly just popped out. So I say it with a laugh because these are the nice little bits I try and remember. You know, I like the birth story because like it was actually really lovely, even though I was in panic and in shock. And they're the little bits I quite like remembering, because he was doing so well when he came out. You know, he came out crying, he came out wriggling, he was breathing on his own, he was just incredible.
That all happened so quickly.
Yeah, it was just within a couple of hours of me going in, he was there. You know, there was no stopping him.
Like a chance to have any steroids or anything like that?
They did inject me, but by the time he arrived, they probably wouldn't have had chance to kick in, but they did try.
Yeah.
And when Aidan was born, was he sort of rushed off immediately? Did you get to hold him initially?
Didn't get to hold him because he was so premature. I think they worried he wouldn't be able to breathe. His lungs wouldn't be fully developed. So the instant, you know, they held him in front of me. I got to kiss his head. They showed him to Rob. Rob was just like, just do whatever you need to do. Just go and work on him. They had him in the room with us. Again, timings. I'm not very good at thinking what the timings were, but probably 10 minutes, 15 minutes, they had him in the room, kind of just wrapping him and cleaning him and checking him. And then, yeah, they whisked him straight off into sort of their version of the NICU, the neonatal intensive care unit, to intubate him, just to help with his breathing, to make sure he could breathe. Because I think their biggest worry is the lungs haven't fully developed at that age. And then it took another 5 hours or so before we were allowed to really see him again, which was really hard. But we did understand they needed to focus on him. You know, they checked me over a few times. I was fine. And so they said they'd transfer him to Ashford, which is a bigger hospital in Kent, which has a better neonatal intensive care unit. So we saw him all wired up and tubed up in his little trolley before they were going to send him over there. And then we followed over in the car. So within 6 hours, I think, of me giving birth, I was in the car on my way to another hospital just so we could be with him.
And when you arrived at that hospital, did you get admitted to the hospital as well, having just given birth? Or
I did. Again, I've heard all sorts of stories, so I'll only focus on mine because this is my experience. But yes, they found me a bed and a room, a private room. So even though it was on the labour ward, I wasn't in with a load of newborn babies, which to this day I'll be forever grateful for, because I don't think I would have been able to do it. I think I would have gone home. So I had a private room just for two nights. And then, the sort of the third day, they were like, look, you're okay. As much as we'd love to let you stay here as long as you want, we need the room. So I did understand that. But they were good in that first 48 hours. I had somewhere I could be, recover, you know, learn to try and pump, you know, and all the things that you don't even think you'll need to do when your baby arrives. So.
And how
that long wait of not seeing him for 5 hours, what were you doing with yourselves in that time?
So I, for the first sort of hour, I was being cleaned up, re-scanned, checking everything had come out. They had to sort of tug to get the rest of the placenta out, which wasn't very nice. And then Rob went home, grabbed a few bits, knowing we might end up going over to Ashford. And we were just in the room waiting, you know, just all the usual. They tested me for infections, thinking, was that what caused him to come so early? You know, they sent everything off for testing. All of that came back as fine. So we were just waiting. I mean, I was in disbelief that he'd arrived. So Rob was the one ringing sort of his parents, my mum, to say, just to let you know, we've had the baby. He's as okay as he can be. I didn't do any of that. I think it took me about a week probably to even message anyone and acknowledge that this was really happening, because I was just in this state of shock. So
I'm sure. And when you arrived at Ashford, how much time were you able to spend with Aidan there?
We could spend 24 hours a day with him if we wanted to. And that, again, we're still in this post-COVID era, but I guess, you know, lucky isn't really a word I use when it comes to Aidan, but there are certain aspects of his care that I feel we were lucky. You know, me and Rob were allowed in whenever we wanted, at any time of day. We were his parents. They knew we needed to be near him, and we were there every single day, not for 24 hours. We had to sleep and, you know, feed the cat and all the boring stuff. But we were there for as much as we possibly could be. Parents were allowed, like my parents, his parents would have been allowed in. But that was really hard. So my mum is in Kent, so she was able to visit him. But Rob's parents are in Ireland, and they're getting, you know, they're a bit older. So it, yeah, the hardest bit for me, I know it's gone slightly off topic, but only my mum and me and Rob met him. So it feels like, because no one else met him, it's very hard for them to kind of think of him as like a living baby, if that makes sense. But yeah.
And how long were you at the hospital for? And talk us through what kind of happened next.
Yeah, so those first 2 days were just a case of every time we'd go and see him, like we'd just be in tears because, you know, he was so, so, so tiny. I mean, not everyone's held or seen a 6 month baby, so it's hard to picture, but he was absolutely tiny. He didn't even fit in the premature nappies, obviously, that, you know, they were like coming up to here on him, you know, on his chest. And it was just really hard because all the, and the beeping, I think we've still got a little, without using the phrase lightly, I think we've still got a little bit of that post-traumatic sort of stress from the noises. So he was tubed up with like a long line in his arm, which gave him sort of all the drugs, I guess, that he needed, and anything in case they needed to quickly put something in him, this long line helped with that. He wasn't intubated after a couple of days. He was all right to breathe with a CPAP. So they had like this tiny, tiny little CPAP over his nose. And the companies who make these are just phenomenal because like they're just incredible. And they're sort of, it's hard to say on a camera, but they're like that big. They're like an inch wide, and you just don't, you can't picture these sorts of things until you see them. So he was hooked up to all of that. He had like a heart monitor. He had like a blood pressure monitor. He had all these things on him. They were doing heel pricks every day. So it was really traumatic seeing such a tiny little baby, one that you so desperately just want to hold and pick up and give a cuddle, and you can't because he's too fragile. And, you know, he had his light therapy for jaundice, which most premature babies need a little bit. So every time we saw him, we were just so happy that he was there and he was fighting and he was doing so well, almost disbelieving that he had arrived, and at the same time really scared because we knew how he might not make it, even though we never thought like that. We always thought he'd come home, but we knew there'd be risks. And we were told constantly the biggest risk for premature babies is infection. But you kind of hope, obviously, that won't happen. So
what was the like the prognosis? The doctors obviously updating you regularly, and what were they saying at that time?
Yeah, so I mean, they couldn't tell us he's doing really well because he was so little and anything can happen. So I think what they were trying to do, and we were lucky with the lead consultant at the hospital at Ashford, he was very good at explaining kind of everything in layman's terms. So he would draw us pictures, he would, like, you know, point things out to us. So Aidan had, like, his heart valves weren't all properly fused, but he said that would probably fix itself, that's normal. You know, he said it's too early to test for certain like brain activities and stuff. Obviously he was as okay as he could be, but, you know, things like would his hearing be okay, he was too little to test, that would have been later. Same with his eyesight, he was opening his eyes, you know, he was crying. Yeah, so that they kept us up to date constantly. They did rounds like twice a day every day, and if we were there through one of those rounds, they'd talk to us about all of their findings, which was really nice. They were very open about it. You know, they were really happy he didn't need to be intubated, so that made us feel really happy that he could breathe on his own. Yeah, there were lots of things they were telling us could go wrong. You know, he might crash, but then he might do okay. And it's sometimes two steps forward, five steps back with premature babies. So we had all of this information, and Rob had actually done a bit more reading. I don't think I could bring myself to do it, but he was reading about sort of what might Aidan be like in a few months' time if he survives and comes out of hospital. What might he be like? You know, what might not be quite right? You know, might he have difficulties? Whereas I just couldn't even bring myself to read that, because in my mind, I just wanted him to be okay. I couldn't see past him getting out of hospital. So yeah, and it was 13 days he was in there before he died. So it was 2 weeks worth of sort of driving nearly an hour each way. But we didn't even, I think it just went in such a blur. I don't even remember the journeys. I just remember being there.
Yeah.
And did during those 13 days, were they, did his health decline? Was it a slow decline or?
No, that's why I think it hit us kind of in the way it did. So every single day he was getting better. His stats were getting better. His monitors were reading, you know, he wasn't beeping as much. So his blood pressure like wasn't moving around too much. He constantly, I can't remember all the terminology to be honest, but he constantly, it's like his blood gases were checked constantly. They were okay. His infection markers were down, so that was okay. He came off the CPAP and he got put onto high flow oxygen, which was a step up. He got moved into the high dependency unit, which is a step up from the NICU. Everything was going in the right direction. So we were just, I mean, the last night we saw him alive and well was the Friday, the 16th of September last year. And we'd held him all day. Like we'd been allowed to hold him a few days prior and we had him on us. And I've got some like beautiful photos of him and he just like nuzzled in between, you know, my boobs. And he was just so happy and content. And we just, that night we went home and we even had a glass of wine and said, we think he's going to be okay. And it was overnight. That night is when he went downhill. So he basically, what the doctors think happened is a little bit of E. coli that lives in all of our gut. They think it kind of went through his gut because it was so thin and not fully sort of developed as it should be into his bloodstream and caused E. coli sepsis. And that's what killed him, is that, you know, they didn't see it quickly enough either. So even if they'd seen it and pumped him full of antibiotics, given him a blood transfusion, all the things they could have done, that still might not have saved him, because as you know, sepsis is something that, you know, it can kill a fully grown adult, let alone a little premature baby. So yeah, that's kind of what happened. And just nobody knew that would happen. Everyone thought he'd be okay because he'd been doing so well.
What was the first you heard of this? Did you get a phone call in the night?
No, so they didn't actually call us, and that's one of the things they apologized for and admitted they kind of need to be better at that. And part of me feels frustrated we didn't get more time to spend with him, but they did ring us at 7 a.m. to say he hadn't done very well overnight. He's back on an intubator, he's back in the NICU, but he's stable. So at 7 o'clock in the morning, we're thinking, and do you know what? I woke up just before they called, no alarm set, something in me. I woke up at about 10 to 7 and I looked at my phone. The first thing I did every single time I woke up, and I went, they've not sent us a video of him overnight. And they'd always, every night, they'd sent us a little video of him using this app.
That's lovely.
It's really lovely, actually. Photos, videos of him being like having his mask changed. And I woke up and I just felt weird because I was like, there's nothing there. Why isn't there anything there? And Rob's like, oh, I'm sure he's fine. Then I get the phone call at 7. We go in, we went in a couple of hours later. We didn't even rush in because they said, oh, you know, he's stable, he's okay. He's just, you know, he was a little bit sick overnight. And by the time we got there, yeah, they were doing everything they could to work on him. And by then it was already way too late. We've obviously, now in hindsight, it was probably too late at 3 o'clock in the morning. But yeah, they were so busy figuring out what to do. I think they just didn't even think to call us in to spend time with him. So when we saw him, he was hooked up to, it's like called a flutter ventilator. So it kind of shakes the body, which was quite traumatic because he was so tiny. It just looked really bizarre. They tried to give him a blood transfusion. And so I don't want to go into too much detail, but at the same time, like he literally, you saw the color in him change. And it was just really, his stomach was all distended and bloated. And we asked lots of questions about, could he be transferred somewhere? And they just said he's not stable enough to be transferred. And oh, it was just a few hours of us constantly hoping that something miraculous would happen to make him better. And like, I just remember the exact moment that the consultant looked up at us both and just said, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do. Have you got someone you can call? And we're thinking, well, yeah, no, not really. So I rang my mum, I texted her, and she came in and was there with us. It's a bit blur, I can't really remember how long she was there for, but yeah. And then they just said, would you like to hold him, and sort of handed us Aiden. He still had his high flow ventilator, he had his intubator in, and we just held him until he kind of had gone. It was just, and we were just like, they put a screen around his cot, but we were still in a room with like three other babies and other people. It was it's horrible. There's you kind of have flashbacks to it, like I'm sure everyone does who's suffered with whatever type of loss. You just have these flashbacks and you can sort of feel it. Like I can feel how I felt back then when it happened. I remember Rob like walking down and just wanting to like punch a wall, because like how else can you even describe how you feel? And we were just, again, there wasn't really anything else they could have done at the time in terms of us, but there was nowhere for us to go at that particular moment when we handed him back and they were going to clean him up and dress him. They offered for us to, but I think we were just a bit too traumatized. And I think this is something that a lot of people talk about in grief groups, is what do you do when your baby dies? Do you spend time with them or not? And I think it's very personal. For us, because we'd had Aiden for 2 weeks and he was alive and we'd cuddled him and fed him through the tube and cleaned him and wiped, you know, changed his nappy and done all of that with him alive, I just, the thought of doing it once he'd died, I couldn't bring myself to do it. And Rob was the same. So we did have him in a little Moses basket in the room with us, but I almost felt claustrophobic, because it was like, this isn't my little baby I've just spent 2 weeks caring for. This, he didn't look the same, he didn't, you know, everything. And we were with him in the room for probably an hour and a half, did a little blessing with him, and I just couldn't bring myself to keep going back to that. Like, I wanted to remember him alive and crying and wriggling and all of those types of things. So it was, looking back, I wouldn't have changed anything, because that's how I reacted at the time. But I suppose everyone would like to spend more time with their baby, wouldn't they? But I just think, it was at the time, that was our decision. So
I think it, like we talk about this a lot, it's you do the best that you can with the information that you have at the time, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so glad that you have no regrets, because I think people can beat themselves up for, you know, something that they should have done. And you're right, it is so, so personal. And I guess, like you said, the fact that you had him for 13 days alive and well and made those memories and got those photos and did all of those lovely things. I think, often when people don't have that time, they really want to spend the time with their baby, because that's the only time that they have, isn't it?
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you don't have any regrets.
I'm so sorry into it. It's just, so this was September 2022.
Yeah, just over a year ago, yeah.
And so how's life been since then for you?
Yeah, it's you probably know, it's a strange question to answer, really, isn't it? So, I mean, in the first couple of months, it was just survival. I mean, Rob's sister got the train down from Chester, where she lives, and spent a night with us just to be there. My mum obviously wasn't. I mean, just to put it in perspective, I lost my dad last January as well to a horrible illness. And so my mum was very much in her grief with that while then we were going through this. And I was very close to my dad, so I think I was still in that grief stage with my dad. So I think the first few months after losing Aiden, I just think I shut down. I just went into this kind of, I didn't really want to leave the house. I didn't really want to talk to anyone. Like, people were trying to support us in the best way they could. And I felt like I just had nothing to say, because I just, like, I can't, you know, people want to fix things, don't they? People want to make things better. People naturally want to make you okay. And there was nothing anyone could have done and still can't to make us okay with what had happened. And I do think that was the biggest struggle, is like, I've lost contact with people through this. You know, people have, I don't want to use the word avoided, because they might not feel they've avoided me, but I feel they've avoided me because they can't cope with it. And I just feel like screaming, imagine what I'm going through. Like, you can't cope with my pain. Imagine how it is when you're the one in pain. So I think those first few months were just a blur of people trying to kind of get in touch to check in on us, but also kind of not really knowing what to do. So some lovely friends sent us some freezer meals, because it's all they could think to help. And that was amazing. And it really did help us. You know, I had people just checking in and texting, not expecting a reply, which massively helps. You know, the people that would just once a week just message and like, I'm thinking of you, when you're ready, like, we'll talk. Had a few people offer to sort of chat to me, and then when I got back in touch with them, didn't really hear from them again. And I suppose it's just, this is, it's a learning curve going through this sort of grief. You don't know how you or people are going to react. And for us, we just needed people around us that weren't going to judge anything, weren't going to ask too many questions, and were just going to let us be angry, sad, in pain. We just needed that. We didn't want anyone to come in and try and make us feel better, because we just couldn't.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd say the first few months were just an absolute blur. And then I got to a stage, Rob went back to work, but kind of on reduced hours. He kind of did a phased return, and it was a new job. And actually, they were very good. They were very understanding of what he went through. My job, obviously, I went instantly onto maternity, was entitled like anyone to full maternity leave. I took 6 months off in the end, maternity, and went back part-time on a bit of a phased return. And my team at the time, they were just phenomenal. My manager was amazing. I cannot imagine having gone through this at many other places, just because they were so supportive of me. So in all the horrible things that have happened, I really try and hold on to the things that I look back now and think, thank God for them at the time. And I think my team.
What do you do, Katie? What's your job?
So I've changed jobs since then. But I worked at the University of Kent in the business school. And so the business school team were my little team, the marketing team specifically. And they were just, I think, you know, one of the girls that worked there, she's who put me in touch with you. So they were just absolutely incredible. The support was just ridiculous. They would check in on me, but then they would let me talk. They would ask me questions. They would listen basically to what I said I needed, and they would react to that. And that's really hard for people to do sometimes, but yeah, they did it amazingly.
It's really hard. But isn't it amazing? Amazing how simple it is actually to help someone in their grief. Is all you have to do is listen to them.
Yeah.
And then reflect what they want you to do and how they want you to be around them. That's all you have to do. Listen and validate. It's so important. So you took 6 months off and then you went back. And how was it sort of returning to that fuller place of life?
Yeah, I was really nervous because I'd only worked at the uni being pregnant with Aiden, because I hadn't been there long when I found out, oh, I'm pregnant. I didn't know what it was like to just be me at that job. So I was really nervous, but they welcomed me back so brilliantly. And I'd had a couple of meetings with them off campus and in different places before I went back. And so my first day back, it felt much easier than I thought it was going to. I think the thing with sort of grief, baby loss grief specifically, maybe, is it just hits you at the most random times, and triggers aren't always obvious. So it might not be a pregnant woman that triggers you. It could be something really ridiculous that triggers you, because it just makes you think about it, or it reminds you of what you could have had, or whatever it might be. So there were times I'd be absolutely fine, and I'd say probably like 90% of the time while I was at work I felt okay, because I was sort of distracted, but then there'd be the most random mention of someone coming back from maternity leave and it would just completely set me off. But I'd kind of do that in my own way. I didn't want everyone around me to kind of be brought down with how I was feeling. Like, I'm quite open with my feelings and I'll cry if I need to cry. But at work, I didn't want it to be a place of constant grief, if that makes sense. I wanted to go back to work to try not to be in that place all the time. And it did, it worked for me. I'm very grateful to that team.
So, the Warrior Ship, we wanted to come and tell you a little bit about it, didn't we, Bex?
And in case you're already going, why? We don't want to know about a fucking ship. The Warrior Ship is our online membership for warriors in this community.
It's packed full of stuff. So we just want to tell you about some of the stuff. All of the content from all of the courses that we ever run is in the Warriorship. So there's loads to get your teeth into.
And we are also developing modules for what happens after.
But not only that, we've also got a ton of educational workshops running once a month. In the coming months, we have got body positivity workshop, gratitude workshop, and loads more.
And on top of that, we also have a resident mental health specialist.
And on top of that, as if that wasn't enough, there's 13 events every month. And there's stuff popping up all the time as well that other people are organising that you can be a part of. So it really is thriving.
And all you have to do is head to the link in our bio or visit our website, and you can be a part of this too.
We'd love to see you there.
I remember a mum job that I had. I worked with some older ladies, and they would always be talking about their grandchildren. Mm. And so, you know, you always think about the triggers, like you say, being around pregnant women and, you know, working with people who are of a similar age. But actually, the old dears and their knitting used to drive me up the wall.
They don't necessarily have... I know you've talked to me before, Laura, about your older clients who don't have that level of kind of self-awareness or, you know, quite old school in how they deal with emotion. And that must be challenging.
Yeah. And but you don't feel like you can say anything. You're just like, oh, they're old and they're set in their ways. And, you know, they're not being malicious. Just rise above it. Let it go.
Yeah, I think there were a couple of moments of people, oh, well, are you going to try again? And I'm just like, wow. And I know this gets talked about so much with people saying the wrong thing and not meaning to and, you know, just saying insensitive things. But I genuinely, like, it used to really wind me up. But actually, the longer through this journey I'm going, the more I think they're just panic reacting to something that they don't know how to talk about. And actually, it's...
An analogy that I've always used for these people is that it's like they come to you with their kind of emotional filing cabinet, and they're looking for something to say to you to make it better. And then they get to a section on baby loss and there's nothing there.
Mm.
They sort of panic and try and stick this big emotional plaster over. And as you said earlier, Katie, it's because they are uncomfortable. They're uncomfortable with your grief. And we did a whole post on almost exactly what you said about, like, if my pain causes you discomfort, like, imagine what it's doing to me.
Yeah.
And it isn't anyone's fault, particularly. It's, you know, societally, it's unfortunately how we've dealt with baby loss for decades, you know, forever. Which is why it's so important to normalize these conversations and make the topic a lot more approachable and understood and really open up the dialogue, Laura. Don't know if you know that one. Don't know if you said that one before. But open up the dialogue, so not just to make the people that go through it make their lives easier, but actually to give an awareness to everyone else that this is what other people are going through. And it's not one or two other people, you know, it's one in four pregnancies end in loss. So there will be someone that you know who is going through it now or has been through it recently or will go through it in the next couple of months. And wouldn't it be lovely if that person could go through it and not feel isolated, which is the number one feeling that women who go through loss, baby loss, report as having felt is isolation. And when you go through such a horrific life experience as you've been through, how nice would it be to not feel alone? How nice would it be able to talk about Aiden in a normal way without being worried about who you're going to make feel uncomfortable or about being judged or about someone saying to you, oh, at least you can try again. Or at least, you know, you can get pregnant.
Mm.
At least, any sentence starting with at least. Imagine if you could talk about your son without fearing that someone's going to minimize your grief by starting with one of those sentences. Wouldn't that be a wonderful world to live in?
It would be.
Yes, it would.
Hmm. Oh, well, that's what we're working on anyway.
One day. Yeah.
And I think I'm definitely pushing, and that's why, you know, I resonate with what you guys talk about and what you're trying to do, because I feel that so strongly now as well. I feel so, like, you know, I am not going to talk about Adam, because if he was still alive, everyone would want to know about him. So why don't they now? Fine, he hasn't reached those milestones other babies do. He didn't get to 1 year old. He didn't learn to walk. He didn't learn to crawl. But he could have. And actually, like you say, it's minimizing someone's pain or life just by almost kind of just ignoring the fact that they had a baby. And that's how it's felt on and off. I mean, I've opened up quite a lot to people in my life about what's happened. My new job, I've only been there a few months. I've told probably at least 10 people what's happened. And I've been met with a range of, oh, I'm so sorry, I don't know what to say. Absolutely fine. Of course you don't. You've not had to go through this. That's understandable. To one lady yesterday or the day before, and she broke down in tears, not because she's been through it, because she's just a very empathetic person. And then I've had other people who instantly try and liken it to something they've been through. And it's just, it's incredible how different everyone reacts to it. But there's a lot of questions asked on baby loss groups, I've noticed, of how do you react when someone asks, have you got children? And since the day Aidan arrived, I have said to people, I have a son. He didn't make it. You know, he didn't survive. And you can see they're kind of like, oh God, I wish I hadn't asked that question. But I don't really let them have that moment. I sort of just go in and tell them what happened. And I would say most of the time people don't react badly. I've had to learn to deal with people's silence. That's the hardest bit, but actually that's for me to deal with, you know. It's, I can't expect them to suddenly know what to say.
I think the silence as well comes from like a real fear of upsetting you further.
Yeah.
You know, it's this real common misconception that if you don't talk about it, then it won't be thought about. And if you don't think about it, then it won't be upsetting. Whereas when you lose a baby, you think about it all the time. And actually it's so misunderstood that you want to talk about it. Like I would love someone to ask me about my experience of baby loss, because I would want to tell them about what happened and you know, all the other things surrounding that, to try and help them understand, so they could then take that information and go and help someone else with it. And then,
yeah,
so all of that stuff, it's so important to talk about. And it's not through, it's so important to remember that, because I think there is this, feeling within the baby loss community is that it's an anger with people who don't understand. It's an anger with people that don't say anything. And I totally understand that. But I don't think that being angry when people don't understand is the right move, because that will just silence them further, because they're so worried that they're going to say the wrong thing. Whereas actually, if we kindly educate people in how to support and understand and what to say, then that's how we're going to get everyone in this together, get everyone supporting and supported.
Yeah.
And it sounds like that's exactly what you're doing. And people's silence, you know, when you tell their story, people's silence, it must be so painful for you that they don't know what to say and they don't know what to do. But the next person they speak to, because you've been so articulate in explaining your grief and your pain, then they will have more of a clue, and they won't perhaps be as silent for as long, or perhaps they'll think back to your conversation and say, oh, I met a lady who's been through that before. And isn't that a wonderful thing as well, to be able to pass that on, so the next person who goes through this heartbreak will feel slightly more supported.
Yeah, I fully agree. And, you know, people have said to me, oh, you must be so brave. And I think that's really lovely. And I'm not going to diminish them saying something really lovely to me. But the only reason I feel so able to talk about it is because I'm doing it for Aidan. In my head, he deserves to be talked about just as much as anyone else's children. So I'm not going to take away from the fact that he was and is our baby boy, and you know, we're so proud of him, and we feel exactly the same way for him as people do with their children. So why wouldn't we talk about him? And I know not everyone has the ability to do that for various reasons, but I just think it's all for him. You know, everything I've done or talked about or anything since he arrived has all been because I want him to be known about, and I want him I want people to be proud of him and how strong he was and how much he fought for his life and all those things people probably don't really think about because he was so tiny and he was a baby. But I mean, he had more strength in 2 weeks than some people in their whole lives, you know, and I think he deserves to be talked about. So
Absolutely. And following Aidan's death, did you go to any sort of groups and counselling or grief sort of with other lost parents?
Yeah, so we were, again, I use the word fortunate because I feel like we are in this instance. So we were given NHS bereavement counselling for baby loss specifically. The lady we had it with is just phenomenal. You know, me and Rob say without her, we don't know what we would have done in those first few months. She'd been through a couple of really sad you know, instances with her family. I won't go into it, it's not for me to say, but she just understood everything we were feeling, we were saying, we were thinking. She just made us feel validated, which is the point, I think, of going to bereavement counselling. You need to feel like it's not your fault. You need to feel like, you know, everything you're feeling is absolutely okay to feel, because, you know, it is one of those situations where there is no right or wrong way to be. So we're really grateful to her for being there for us, and she has really been there for us. And then SANS is probably the place I'm just so grateful they exist. I know, you know, Tommy's is there. There's so many different groups and forums you can go on to, but SANS was the one I turned to. And I'm just, yeah, really grateful for the fact I could talk to women. And, you know, you'll understand this, and anyone who's been through this will understand this, but I think a lot of people who haven't don't. When I say I needed to know other people were struggling like I was, I needed to know I wasn't going crazy with my grief. So actually having this forum where hundreds of mostly women, because it's mostly women who generally join these forums in my experience, are there talking about how they feel and how hard it is and why am I thinking this? Why am I, I needed that. And I think SANS and those other groups offer that. So I think they're just so important. So for me, a mixture of counselling, talking, joining group, everything, basically, I just tried to do as much as possible to find some kind of, not even normal, but just to find some level of existence where I wasn't just constantly crying or feeling like I couldn't just do normal daily tasks.
Yeah, there's a lot to be said for being surrounded by people who understand, because we talk about it a lot, but people in our lives, the people who we love the most in the whole world, don't always really understand. They don't get it. And that can be really, really difficult, because the usual people that you turn to for support aren't always the right people. So it's amazing that these communities are out there.
Mm-hmm. So good. And that was so, you lost Aidan in the September. So how was that first Christmas? Because we're obviously coming up to Christmas now, but, and it's, I know lots and lots of women within the community are really struggling at the moment. So that must have been a hell of a thing to go through so quickly after Aidan died.
Yeah, so he was due at the end of November. So we'd planned for my mum to go spend Christmas with my brother. He lives in Australia, which was the plan anyway, just because we'd have a newborn in the house. And obviously, you know, we wanted to like hunker down and kind of enjoy that time. So because she was already sort of booked in to go and do that, I think when he died and we started actually thinking, oh God, it's December, I don't think we could even really think about it. So we didn't get a tree, we didn't do anything, we didn't decorate, we didn't have it in us to do anything. So we booked and literally went to the Isle of Wight for 3 days over Christmas in a little cabin, away from everyone, away from everything, told everyone we might not have any signal, because we didn't want the pressure of having to wish people a happy Christmas when we were so miserable. And we just spent 3 days pretty much just crying, but it felt nice that we were sort of in hiding. I don't know, some people might go the opposite and almost want to be surrounded by people, but we just couldn't. We couldn't cope with people saying things like Happy Christmas, or, you know, bringing in the new year, or reflecting on their year. Because for us, it had just been, well, I'd been through three losses in that year, my dad, my grandma and Aidan, and I just couldn't cope with anyone trying to put a positive spin on something, because in my head there was just nothing positive about anything that was happening. So Christmas was horrific last year, as I'm sure it is for many, and this year it was my birthday yesterday. So with my birthday and Christmas, I find December's a really tough month because I'm like, I'm another year older, still don't have a baby. You know, I want Aiden here. He should be celebrating this. I should be getting a card saying happy birthday, mommy. You know, all those things that I feel have been stolen from me. So yeah, I'm feeling very emotional this week compared to probably what I was 3 weeks ago. You can just, it's like inside, you can feel it.
How was your birthday yesterday? Happy birthday.
Thank you. it was nice. Like, you know, Rob made it really nice and we just stayed in. Mum popped round, you know, we bought our Christmas tree. We decorated it this year. It's nice having one this year, but it also reminds me of, you know, what we should have. So it's bittersweet, I think, is how I feel this month at the moment. So
one of our we're running a sort of very, very small Christmas course at the moment, and on one of our calls the other day, a lady who lost her little boy earlier this year has bought him like a memorial Christmas decoration to hang on the tree. And she said that just the act of doing that and choosing it and putting it on a special branch of the tree was really, really helpful for her to grieve. And I think there's something really big in that having something tangible to say, this is for my baby and this is what I'm doing is really special. And it, around this time of year as well, when it's not just about, you know, fairy lights and presents, is it? It's about, I think about Christmas is about remembering mm-hmm. who should be there and celebrating them as well as part of the family.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I mean, I think, you know, last year was first Christmas without my dad, as well as without Aiden, as well as without my gran. And I think it was just too much, is probably the way to say it. It was too much to deal with. Whereas this year is definitely going to be more a year of reflection. Rob's mum bought a gorgeous silver rocking horse with Aiden's name on it, which we hung up yesterday and, you know, posted it and sent a photo back to her. One of my other friends bought us a little Christmas tree decoration with A on it. And another friend she asked her nan to knit Aiden a little bear. So he's now in the tree as well. So I feel really grateful that we've got people around us who have acknowledged him in that way. And that was all from last year into this year. And we bought him a little like octopus made of beads, because when he was in the NICU, he got given like a little octopus toy with the little, you know, the little tentacles, whatever they're called. And it was to emulate the umbilical cord. And that's why they give them to little premature babies. You might have seen them. So we got him that, and that's sort of sitting on the mantle. And we, you know, we chose to have Aiden cremated. So we've still got him, you know, we don't feel like we can ever part with him. Maybe in the future we'll do something, but he's with us, you know, he's on the mantelpiece. We've got his little hand and footprints, but pushed out, so in plaster, so we can sort of tickle his feet. And people never know what to think when we say that, but actually we go up and we touch his hand and we tickle his toes, and it sounds really weird, but we did that when he was in the NICU, so it feels really nice to be able to do that. So we've tried to put as many parts of him around the house as we feel we would have if he was here. It's difficult, but you like you say, mm-hmm. you need the act of doing that. It does kind of bring you something, whatever that thing is. I love being surrounded by memories of him. So,
and how does the future look? I mean, are you thinking about trying to have another baby, or is that just a different like world from you right now?
No, we have been. I had a miscarriage earlier this year around Rob's 40th. Went for our 12-week scan. Having had one at 6 weeks, everything was fine. And it hadn't really grown since that 6 weeks, because I was on a load of progesterone pessaries. It just kept everything in. And so that was hard. I had to go like take the tablets and experience that. And then more recently, at the end of August, had a 5-week miscarriage. It's just crap, you know. There's no, and I'm honest with people about it, you know, there's no point hiding it. There's probably a whole nother conversation around the feeling of not being able to get pregnant again after loss, but it's coming to terms with a lot of different things all in a short space of time. It's difficult.
It's so hard. I'm so sorry that the year you've had has followed the loss of Aiden. That's just, it's so unfair.
It is unfair, but I don't know. It just, for me, it sounds quite, probably sounds a bit over the top, but like me and Rob have chosen that we want to live life, you know, after loss. So for me, that is just trying to do things and trying to still enjoy the life we have, because I think for me, I don't want to spend 40 years feeling depressed. I don't want that for myself. It's not something I just couldn't do it. So as much as we have these times that are really hard and really horrible, and don't get me wrong, like yesterday I was in tears yesterday evening because I just felt horrible for no reason in particular. It just, it hits you, doesn't it, at the most random times. But I don't want to stop trying and stop living either, because I think, you know, what's the point? You know, if you don't try and make the best of what you can. So yeah, it's been horrific, and I wouldn't lie to people and say it hasn't been horrific, but I also don't want that to be the rest of my life. And it's hard figuring that out. That's the bit, yeah, I'm stuck at the moment on. So
I think that's a completely, well, I think it's completely inspirational that you have the strength of character to be able to see that for yourself, and you know, the ability to self-reflect on your life in that way. And I think that this podcast episode is going to be so good for so many people who have been in your situation. And can people, do you have like an Instagram account that people can sort of follow and get in touch with you? Or
so mine is private, but I'm more than happy for people to get in touch. So yeah, I mean, my Instagram is just Kate, the letter Katie Wells 1986, I think, bit of a giveaway, or 86, I don't know. And I'm happy to connect with people. The reason I haven't got a public one is I've just not really, there's so many out there already. I feel like I'd rather just support ones that are already there as opposed to creating a whole new one. But I'd love to chat to people, you know, just in terms of kind of things I've done. Have I got time just to go through a few bits I've done for Aidan? So for me, like I said, it's really important to remember him. So we saw that the RNLI offer you to sponsor their lifeboats and have your loved one's name on them. So we did that for Aidan. So we went to see the lifeboat when it was built down in Portsmouth in Poole. And we got to go and see his name on the side of the lifeboat and touch it and take photos. And then it's now based up in Whitby. And on their first patrol of the boat, a massive pod of dolphins swam alongside it, which is really rare, especially up there. And there was a news story on it. So we feel like Aidan's now helping to save lives at sea. And when I say that, it gives me goosebumps, and it just makes me feel really proud of him. We're just so grateful to do things like that. And just so many things. We had a bench made and it's got his name on it, and it was carved locally by a really lovely guy. And he carved into the side of the bench a dog, which represents one of Rob's old dogs that he loved. And it's got Aidan's name. It's got granddad on there for my dad. You know, we're trying to keep his memory alive in so many ways. We've raised money for SANS by hosting a local ribbon display during Baby Loss Awareness Week. And I know not everyone will be able to do everything, and there's certain things I'd love to do more of, but you need to feel you can do it at the time you're doing it. And I think when we booked this meeting in, I probably felt a lot stronger than I do now. But as soon as I start talking about him, I find I can't stop. So I just, for anyone, I would say you can only do what feels right for you. You can't force it. But I don't think you'll ever regret talking about your baby more and more. I think, you know, don't be shy to talk about them, because they are yours. And why wouldn't you want to, you know?
I think just through, I mean, the love is, oh, I'm going to cry, sorry.
You set me off if you do.
It's just so, I can just feel your love through everything that you said. And it's just so lovely to be able to, I feel privileged to have been able to remember Aidan with you.
Thank you. Yeah, that's what I hope for. So yeah, I want people to talk about him like he's awesome, because he is, and he was, you know, so.
Oh, Katie, thank you so much for joining us. Yeah, I know this Christmas will be super tough in so many ways, but I'm really glad that you can continue to spread the joy that you have for your little boy.
Thank you.
And keep in touch with us. And I hope that that some people get in touch with you, because I think that you'll be so helpful to them in just, you know, sharing Aidan. And that's exactly what you're doing. And that's exactly why this community is so helped by people like you, because it gives them the courage to be able to share their own stories, which is how this whole thing is going to help others in the future.
Yeah, no, I hope so. And yeah, people have helped me. So if I can do anything to help others, then yeah, hopefully that works. So thanks for letting me tell mine and Aidan's story.
Thank you for sharing your story. It's been really lovely chatting to you. Yeah, keep in touch. Let us know how you're getting on. And I hope that you have a gentle Christmas.
Yeah, no, it should be, yeah, it's already feeling better than last year, which, you know, time heals. But yeah, I think as long as we talk about him all the time, I think we'll get there, you know, whatever there is. So yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much, Katie, and take care of yourself.
Yeah, speak to you both soon. Thank you.
Bye.